Good morning and welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Also pleased to have here back on the program once again, Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she is here and we talk about lawn and garden care, taking care of things that grow in the home landscape. If you have questions, it can be about trees, shrubs, flowering plants, stuff you can eat, house plants, any and all of that. If you have a problem, if you will call in and tell us what kind of plant you're talking about and give us the best description of the problem, Sandy will see if she can do a little troubleshooting. Perhaps also people are still thinking about planting things. So maybe you're looking for a particular kind of plant for a particular place. She might be able to suggest something to think about. So any and all questions that have to do with lawn and garden care, they are fine, and she will do her best to help you out. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. So at any point here, if you've got a question, you can give us a call. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here. I guess we were just talking here about, before we got going, about how dry it has been, at least the past I don't know, May was really pretty much down, and in the last couple of weeks here, I think at least for us here in Champaign-Urbana, I think we've gotten about half an inch or less. So it's been, stuff is, I don't know, in my yard, stuff's starting to look a little peaked, the grass particularly.
Yeah, and that's being kind, probably. I think they're turning to straw. And, and part of the problem was, too, we had such drying winds there for a while, too. So it wasn't just hot and dry, we also had wind. So I think that really affected a lot of things, and they haven't really even recovered from that little bout of drought. So it really is something that people really should be thinking about, you know, those plants that you've just put in. So anything that's newly transplanted, those are the ones you really need to think about. And if you've had trees that were transplanted even maybe 2 or 3 years ago, those are still not considered completely, set. Mm-hmm. It's not the time to quit worrying about them. So if you've had plants, you know, trees within, you know, the last even 3 or 4 years, I'd definitely still be thinking about watering those periodically.
Yeah, and the standard advice is that if you're going to water, you can't just go around and give everything a little spritz. That's not good.
It makes us feel better, but it doesn't really make
good. It's not really good for the plants. But what you really want to do is do some concentrated watering so that you could get a good inch on the area that you're concerned with, and then that should be good for, what, a week?
Yeah, usually we say an inch of water a week for most things. That's usually a pretty good. Now, if it's, again, if it's newly transplanted annuals, you're not going to be able to get away with that. Yeah. If it's usually for especially some of the woody species, we usually have pretty good luck doing that. And there are things like these tree gators. I don't know if you've seen them. They look like green plastic bags. Yeah. So if you have a hard time, you know, just spending the time there with letting it trickle, you can certainly use those tree gators on young trees. And that's wonderful. You just sort of fill them up and walk away, and then it slowly trickles out. So there are some things that can help you. Soaker hoses are always a really good idea because you don't lose. If you're using a sprinkler, you end up losing a lot of water just to evaporation. So if you can use soaker hoses or something, you can really be much more efficient in what kind of watering you're doing. And it won't take you quite as long if you set up some soaker hoses.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have several people here who'd like to talk with you. We'll start in with someone in Champaign. This is line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Standard question about dividing daylilies.
Mm-hmm.
What's the procedure? I mean, do you go dig it out? Do you just dig out a portion? And when do you do it?
Well, the nice thing is with daylilies, if you're not familiar with working with perennials, it's a great one to mess with because you can't hardly kill them. So that's the good news. You can't hardly do wrong with these guys. And you could do any number of whether the things you mentioned. If you have a planting and you really like where it is, but it's just getting a little too big, the clump's getting too big, you certainly could just cut out a section of it. You don't have to dig up the whole thing. Now, most of the time people do dig up the whole thing and then separate them. And what you'll find is that once you get them out and maybe wash them off a little bit, the roots off a little bit, you'll notice that they actually just kind of come apart. You can just kind of pull them apart. Uh-huh. And you can make the divisions as big as you want. I'd probably have at least 3 crowns in a division, but you can, you know, you could take it clear down to 1 if you wanted to. But usually you have 3 or 4 crowns in a division. Or you can just, you know, just spade them out, whatever. Probably most of the time, you know, again, daylilies are one of those you can do just about anything and they survive, but probably most of the time we'd rather do it in the springtime, like in April, May, and then again in fall, like September or so. So usually the hot part, if you did happen to do it now on something like daylilies, I'd just make sure that I watered them well.
Okay.
If you were
going to
do that.
So if you do take the whole thing out, then you are supposed to, then you put it back in, just with the section that you want back in?
Right. You certainly can do that. Just and usually we're just trying to divide them for any number of reasons. You know, maybe they're not blooming as well, something like
well,
that.
They're actually doing really, really
well, then I'm not sure I'd worry about it unless the clump's really getting too big.
It looks like it's getting too big, but maybe it's just a really healthy plant this year. They've only been in about 4 years.
Oh, well, then if they've only been there 4 years, I'm not sure you really need to worry about it all that much, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'd relax. And it sounds like you got your hand full. I heard a little squeaker back there in the background.
Yeah,
so.
He's about 3 months old.
Oh, okay.
The question I had was my dad gave us some cuttings for, he called it a wandering Jew.
Mm-hmm, could be.
Okay, they're purple and they have like a little tiny little flower at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. And so, okay, so we put them in. We're not quite sure if we put him in the right place, though. He had him in a very shady spot, and we don't. And so is that not good for them?
Right, right. They actually can, they're really often used as a houseplant. Really. And we normally would have grown them as houseplants, but we're finding more and more that houseplants are sort of moving outdoors, and certainly if you go to Florida, some of the warmer areas, they use a lot of houseplants outdoors.
Well, he had them all along the edge of his, you know, along the backyard, one of the side parts of it, and it was really beautiful.
Right.
So we thought, oh, you know, we'd like some of that. And so we thought we'd kind of do the same way, put it in a bed. And then we also put some in a pot. We had a little bit extra. So we put them in a pot. Now, the one in the pot just kind of like fell over in a way. I mean, it's long, it seems
like. Well, they're actually more of a hanging kind of plant. They sort of crawl out, and that's kind of just the way they are.
Okay.
They kind of, they kind of hang and crawl. So it's doing its normal thing. I think usually we'd probably say to go ahead and put those in the shade. If you do them in full sun, I'd make sure that you water them well. And if you start to notice like brown spots on them or kind of beigey spots on them, then they're getting sunburnt and they're just getting too much sun. So I think you'd have better luck if you had them in a shady spot, but you could certainly try them in sun.
Okay, but so just water them really well.
And look for those spots. If you start seeing the spots on them, then I'd say it's just too much for them.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, great.
Good luck.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go on to another Champagne person. This is line number one. Line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm just something, an occurrence that we see every so often. I've seen twice in my garden. This morning I went out after watering yesterday, and there's a big, like a half a foot of, it looks like a yellow, like someone squirted whipped cream. And overnight it just appears.
And it's on the, you have mulch there, I assume? Or?
Yes.
It's really just one of the fungus that grows on mulch, probably one of the slime molds. And sometimes people call it, looks like dog vomit. Not very attractive.
Yeah.
Hopefully everybody's done with breakfast. But, it's this foamy, and it's really odd looking.
Right.
And that sounds perfectly normal that it would show up at night. You know, it's one of those things we don't really worry about it too much. It's growing strictly on the mulch. It's not going to cause a problem with your plants. It just looks weird. You can rake it up. Once that dries out, you'll find that you don't even notice
dark.
It.
Dark,
yeah.
I didn't know, is it okay? I was spraying it off because it was right by my front door. It didn't look too good.
Yeah, probably not what you want people to see when they walk up to your door, is it? So I would just either rake it, or usually if you rake it apart or just rake it off, then eventually it'll quit showing up. So.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, sure.
All right, thank you. And let's see. We'll go next to our line number three, and this would be someone in White Heath right here. Hello.
Hi.
I
was just curious. We have a bunch of white pine trees on our lot, and they're really tall. And I was just wondering, do you know the life expectancy of a white pine?
A lot of that depends on where it is and all that kind of good stuff. You should get, I would say, at least 50 years of usable life out of them. I would think even 60 to 70, but they're not going to live, at least around here. We're not going to see them probably living like an oak tree where you'd get hundreds of years. But I don't know. Between you and me, we're probably not going to notice, whether they get much past.
Well, we have a whole bunch of them, and I just, they take a lot of battering from the wind and stuff, and they have. It seems like they all grow up. The top of the tree has the green, and then towards the bottom they lose limbs and stuff. So,
Yeah. Now, they will do that over time. Yeah. I don't know how old these are. But
well, these are pretty old. They're,
yeah,
they that's must an, be 40 or 50 years
yeah,
old.
Yeah. See, that's a normal thing for a lot of the pines is that they normally lose their lower branches. That's fine. But if they've been surviving that long in that spot, then I'd say, you know, you should easily get several more years out of them. I wouldn't be giving up on them yet for sure.
No, I'm not. I just was curious because I don't want to have to take them down.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, I've taken a few smaller ones down, but it'd be very expensive. We have many trees.
right. And they really don't get a whole lot of insect and disease problems. What
we noticed has
been, you know, site related. So if they're happy, I'd say, you know, you should see them well into their later years.
Oh, good. Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and we continue. And the next person is in Mattoon, line number 4.
Good
Hello.
Morning.
Yeah.
I have a few garden questions. I've only had about 1/14 of an inch of rain this month,
and it
reminds me of last year when I had blossom rot problems with the tomatoes, and I just wondered if there's anything I can do to keep it from occurring again.
Right. Well, you know, probably a lot of people notice this from time to time on their tomatoes, with just the bottom end just gets black and actually rots out. And it's usually worse when we have really hot, humid days. So part of that we can't do a whole lot about. But the one thing you can do something about is that they have found that it's not as prevalent if you can supply some continuous watering. As in, you water them and let them go dry, and water them, let them go dry. That actually kind of aggravates the problem. So if you can, you know, water them sort of consistently, where they're not just going bone dry in between waterings, that will help.
Well, I've been watering about every 5 or 6 days.
Oh, then that's great. Do you have any mulch on them or anything that's going to help to keep the water in? You might want to consider some mulch to help. You know, keep that consistent moisture, as well as then the soil temperatures don't get as high. So that really helps. Those kind of things help. Caging them as opposed to staking them usually helps. But as I said, a lot of it has to do with the weather that we have. Now, it's been nice that we haven't had a whole lot of really humid days, at least recently. So, you know, part of that we can't do a whole lot about. But it sounds like you're doing just exactly what you need to do to take care of it.
I've got a question on zucchinis. I planted some several weeks ago, and they're starting to bloom, and like in the past, sometimes the blossoms just drop off, and last year I had a problem where I might get one zucchini to a plant, and then they just kept dropping off, and I heard somewhere about maybe they're not getting pollinated, or
right.
I just wondered, how do you do that?
Well,
that's up to the bugs.
We need to have a talk about the birds and the bees. No, they do need to be pollinated. But when you say they drop off, is it the female flowers that are dropping off or the male flowers are dropping off?
I don't know the difference.
Well, the female flowers actually have kind of a swollen area right behind the flower. Because you may just see the male flowers falling off, which we don't necessarily care about. Because they will just go ahead and fall off. So you may just... You know, that might be one. So I would just look and see if it's actually the female flowers, and they're the ones that have a little swollen area. It looks like a little, if you look really close, it looks like a tiny little zucchini back there.
That's the female?
And those are the females, and those are the ones that need to be pollinated. And you could
pollinate from one flower to the other?
Sure, but you need to take a male, find one that doesn't have that swollen area behind it, and take a male, and sometimes you just pick the petals off, and then you can just pollinate them yourself if you wanted to. But usually the insects, you know, the bees and stuff do a pretty good job of doing that. So usually that, but you may notice, you know, a lot of times with the brand new plants, you get a lot of male flowers first,
okay.
And you don't get your female flowers till later on.
Well, that sounds kind of complicated to recognize. That.
Once you see them, you'll say, oh yeah, that's the female. And it's more obvious than probably how I'm describing it.
Another question on a transplant. My wife has a yucca plant that
mm-hmm.
A plant was brought up from southern Illinois and transplanted, and we're part of it. There's a lot of it sprouting up green, but then there's some brown ones
mm-hmm.
that are just falling over. And do I water that frequently or just about like everything else?
Well, you know, they're really tough. They take a lot of drought before it upsets them too much, to be honest with you. So I'm not sure I worry about them too much. They're new transplants. You might give them water every once in a while, but I really wouldn't worry about them too much. And it, when you say they're getting brown, is that the little, they actually have a sort of a mother plant, and then they have all these little, what they call pups, these little baby plants.
The leaves that were on it when they arrived.
Oh, the leaves are turning brown?
They have turned brown, and yeah. I guess might as well just clip them.
Yeah, those will. A lot of times, especially as they age, those lower leaves will just turn brown anyway. So that's, you're probably just seeing kind of a natural thing in the fact that they were transplanted.
Is this the time of the year to set the lawnmower up one more notch?
You betcha. You betcha. I mean, it's really a good idea to make sure that you're not mowing too, because, you know, they're really, especially if you're not watering, it's just really hard for on the grass this time of year. And it's normal for Kentucky bluegrass and the cool season grasses to go dormant now. So you probably notice you're not even mowing quite that much. But definitely,
well,
it ought to be up to 3 to 3.5 inches. You really should be mowing high.
The yard, I just water my garden.
Yeah, yeah.
I do have a few things that need to be clipped.
Right. So 3, 3.5 inches, I'd be setting it up. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Good luck.
I think this is something that we've probably been hearing more and more in recent years, the advice being don't cut the grass too short, that's particularly important. And we're going through times like this, and then, you know, if we have long periods where it's very warm and it's very dry, better to have it long. Yeah. And it's not going to grow that much anyway.
No, and half the time if you have any weeds, that's all you're cutting off, it seems like, is the weeds. But they really have noticed a definite correlation between the height of the grass and what kind of root system it has. So we really want to encourage that really deep root system. And so if you mow really, really short all the time, you're encouraging a very shallow root system, and that's not what we want, because then it has a harder time, you know, getting through these periods. So even during good times, you know, it still should be probably 2 inches would be the shortest should ever mow.
And 3 inches, that's fairly,
that's
like 3 fingers worth at least. So that's
most people can tolerate that, you know, without feeling like, and so it's that whole putting green kind of, we see golf courses and stuff, and that's not the, you know, we shouldn't be doing that in our own home yard.
Yeah. Okay. Sandy Mason is here. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County once a month on a Tuesday. She's here to talk about lawn and garden care. And if you have questions, give us a call. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Next is someone in Urbana, line one.
Hello?
Yes.
My question is about peonies. And, I have one peony bush that had what looked like nice buds on it, and they never opened.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? It's because it's so dry, or what causes that?
Well, actually, sometimes peonies will get a disease called botrytis, and they form the flower bud, and then it just never opens because they get this disease, this fungal disease. And sometimes it's, and because we did get a little bit of wet weather there for a while, believe it or not. And I've had several people comment that they had the same thing on their peonies. So it's usually a lot of it's related to the weather we have. If you find that it happens continually, you know, you'd want to make sure you increase air circulation. I don't know if it's among a whole bunch of other plants, but anything that helps them dry out more.
There's 3 peony bushes all near each other.
Right. Did they all do it or just one did it?
Well, the one did it. The others didn't have very many blossoms.
Right. Right. Well,
not
it was kind
like
of a tough year. Yeah, it was kind of a tough year for a lot of things. So what I would do is go ahead and cut those off and get them out of there. And then at the end of the season, just make sure you clean, you know, once all that stuff dies, all the leaves die, just get that stuff out of there and don't leave it there, so because it'll just reinfect for next year.
Well, I do that, but how do you get rid of that? What did you call it, a fungus?
Botrytis. It's a fungus.
Yeah, how do you get rid of it?
Well, you really don't get rid of it, to tell you the truth, because it's everywhere. It's blowing all over the place. But it would be something if it happened every single year, you tried everything else, it would be a fungicide spray, but you'd have to use it as a protectant. You'd actually put it on really before they really start setting buds.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, you have to decide whether you want to go that route or not. But usually it's, you know, worse some years than it is others, but...
Okay, so if you did spray, you'd spray in the spring when the shoots started to come up?
Yep, you really have to, you're trying to protect the plant against infection,
since
we can't really get rid of the
fungus. Is that readily available to a person like me?
Sure, they can go to the garden centers and they can help you out.
Okay. So you think it's the botrytis that caused the buds not to open?
That's very common in peonies.
Uh-huh.
It's very common.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right, let's go to line number two, and this is someone in Mattoon. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see if I could get some tips on how to properly plant a strawberry pot. And these are, you know, the taller cylindrical pots with the rows of holes down the sides. And I always try to plant annuals in there, and it seems like I have a dickens of a time getting water down to the lower row of holes.
Right.
If I try to water directly in the hole, it just washes some dirt out.
Right.
So
right.
Is there any tricks or tips on how to plant those so that everything thrives?
Well, one thing that actually works out really well is if you can just get a small diameter PVC pipe and put holes in it, and then you put it down the center, and then you actually water into it.
Well, that was one plan that I had, so...
And I've seen that used really fairly effectively. And then it kind of just seeps out of that PVC pipe rather than just rushing out, where it usually does. And then, I don't know, when you're planting them, do you plant as you go?
Yes.
Okay, so you're planting as you go, kind of stamping them in or whatever, you're packing them in, and then keep planting up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And then what happens, though, is that obviously the dirt from above, the soil from above,
right,
you know, fills up the hole, so there's really no room there. Now, if you go with the PVC pipe, you need to close off the bottom end so the water doesn't just go right out the drain hole of the pot.
You really don't have to. I suppose if it's right over, I think what I would do is probably not really plug that hole or plug that area. I think I'd probably put something over it, like a coffee filter or something, so it doesn't just rush out immediately. Because you want it to go out eventually, you just don't want it to rush out immediately. If that makes sense. And then it'll just sort of seep out. You just sort of, you know, you'd put it in there obviously when the pot's empty, and then put a few holes in it and just go that route. And I've seen that done fairly effectively.
Any tricks now that it's planted?
Yeah, good question. I knew you were going to ask me that. Boy, I don't know. With that, I don't know whether you can knock one down. You might be able to, then you're going to get soil in it. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I just, you know, water a little at the top and let it soak in and keep doing that until, you know, I see it at the bottom, or I have a, you know, like one of those shower head type waterers, and I put that on low pressure and do the whole pot, and that seems to help out, but...
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Unless there's some way you could knock it in, but you'd have to have the bottom closed, obviously, if you were going to put a pipe or anything. Well, I don't know. Maybe somebody, one of the listeners has a suggestion for that, but wow.
If nothing else, I know what to do next season.
Next season. There's always next year.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Well, good luck.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks for the call. Our number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Just a real quick question. One of these things that I guess I have always heard about watering is that it would be a good idea if you're going to water to try to water maybe in the early morning or at least by midday and not in the evening, because what you want is the water to soak down into the soil so the roots can get it. You really don't want water hanging on the foliage of the plant, because even when it's dry, you can still promote kind of fungal diseases, those sorts of things, if the foliage of the plant is wet. Is this
now, see, David,
true?
You and I have been doing this program long enough. I don't even have to show up anymore. You just
stop
know it.
It
all already.
No, see, no, just stop
already.
It. Just stop it.
Yeah, actually, that's absolutely true. So it's for a number of reasons. You're better off if you can do it early in the morning. We get in this habit, like you get home from work, and then you think that's the time to water because that's when you have time. But it really is not good for the plant. So if you have to do it at night, just try to keep the foliage dry, because that cooler weather at night is just perfect for fungal diseases. And then that moisture on top of the leaves or flowers or whatever, it's just perfect for fungal diseases. So trying to keep the foliage dry is really important. So try to do it in the morning. If you can use soaker hoses or anything like that that's going to keep the foliage dry, you're generally better off.
Yeah. All right. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with some other folks here. Let us go to line number two in Champaign. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I'm calling about some newly transplanted spruce trees, 4 to 5 feet tall, and tips of some of the branches are turning brown. Are they lost?
just the tips are turning brown?
Yes.
And when were these transplanted?
Oh, a few weeks ago.
Oh, wow. And then you've been able to water them on a regular basis?
Well, they haven't been. I'm sort of taking over for somebody.
Oh.
And started, I gave them all a big shot yesterday. Right. And mm-hmm. I just don't know where we're standing with them.
Well, I suspect, you know, part of the problem, obviously, they're a new transplant, so they don't have the root system that a tree normally that size would have. And then we had those horrible drying winds. So everything was sort of drying out, whether it had water or not. So I have a feeling you've just seen some of that, and it's certainly not too late. Certainly at the very ends, you can just sort of crack them and you can see whether they're dead or not. If the very ends are dead, you know, it's not great. But what you find is that usually there's still enough needles behind that it will go ahead and branch out again. So you'll see new growth. Usually, unless the whole limb is brown or dead, then it's gone.
No, not the whole limb yet. So that's why I was worrying about it.
You've probably seen a little dieback from the transplant and the lack of water or those kind of things, but it's certainly not lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would just go ahead and just make sure you water and keep the soil moist and whatever it's going to take.
What kind of watering schedule would you suggest for trees of that size?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. A lot of it, is this clay soil or black, or do you know what the soil's like?
Well, there is a high amount of clay in the soil. It's not completely clay, but mm-hmm. there's a high amount.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of those things that generally say that really need to check and just get an idea yourself, because it's going to depend on where it's located, the soil type and all that stuff. So generally, we're really talking about, we want to make sure that at least the top 8 to 10 inches of soil is wet.
Okay.
So that it'll work its way in. So you can water it. You may find, usually you can get away with every few days with an inch or so, you know, on a young tree like that.
Right.
I assume it was bald and burlapped. Is that how it came?
Yeah, I believe, yeah.
Okay. Because containerized plants, you need to water more often than that. They really need a lot of water because of the soil mix that they were in. So I would just really watch them. And then if you find, you know, if you're watering like every 3 days or so, go out and check. You know, just feel the soil. And if it feels really wet yet, then you may be fine. You may be able to go every 4 days or so. But so much of it depends on, you know, what was the temperature? What was the wind like? And so it's kind of hard to say exactly what your schedule is going to be. So I'm sorry to give you such a kind of wishy-washy answer, but it really does depend on where you are.
Okay. Would any supplements to the soil help? Any of these spikes, for example, or putting that device that shoots vitamins into the soil in various places?
You know, on a young plant like that, we really don't recommend doing a lot of fertilization on it. At least for the first few years. Your best bet is that if you can get, you can actually get these soaker rings. I don't know if you've ever seen them. It's just a soaker hose, but it's actually in a ring, and then then you just hook it up to your hose.
Is that what you call a tree gator?
Well, tree gators are actually a bag,
okay.
Which you can use on spruce. They're a little bit harder because, you know, it's hard to get to them.
Right.
So they're really kind of hard to use on evergreens. So usually like a soaker hose or something like that, I would set something like that up where you get a slow trickle and then it's set up. Maybe you've got it long enough that you can water all of them at the same time. And that if you can do that, then it's going to take a lot of the time that you have to worry about it. And they're just going to get a more consistent watering.
Gotcha. Okay, well, that's good. Okay, I do have a soaker hose, but I will look for rings.
You can get soaker ring, or you can certainly use a hose and just kind of string it between one to the other, down one side, down the other, and then you can figure out, you know, how, you know, depending on the water pressure and stuff, how long it takes you to really get a good drench on them, and then mulch them. You know, I'd put some wood chip mulch or something around them.
Yeah, I've got mulch around them.
Okay, that's good. So you're doing really all the things you need to do. Just however it can make watering easier for you, I think it's going to mean you're going to be able to water them more often.
Sounds good. Okay, well, I do appreciate that.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you.
Thank
Let's
you.
Go on to line number three. This is someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for taking the call.
Mm-hmm.
I have some bushes that need trimming up. They're looking terribly shaggy. Would it be smart to trim them now or let it go?
Do you know what kind they are?
Oh, well, I've got all kinds.
All kinds. Yeah, this, because it's so hot and dry right now, it probably wouldn't be the best time in the world to be doing it.
Be too much of a shock.
Yeah, it's awful lot. And now, depending on, you know, if it was, I don't know, privet or some of those that are so tough you can't really kill them, I probably wouldn't worry about it too much. But I think you'd be better off if they're spring blooming. Generally, we do it right after they flower. If they're ones that bloom during the summertime, you can do them either spring or fall. But really, spring and fall is probably a much better time because then the weather's cooler. We usually have more water, those kind of things. So I think I'd hold off if you can.
All right.
Just don't look. Just put your blinders on and don't look at those right now.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Back here to line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I was calling in response to the gentleman who was asking about the strawberry pots.
Oh, good.
I just read something the other day about putting a paper towel tube down the middle. Now, I always use a tea bag over the hole, but a coffee filter that you suggested is great. But I use a tea bag, still has to use tea in it, and that's fertilizer, too. But you, if you put a cardboard tube down the middle and then fill it with pea-sized gravel, and then when you're through planting it, you just kind of wiggle that out very gently, and you're left with a column of gravel.
Now that's interesting.
I thought it was kind of clever. You leave the gravel about half an inch or so, or an inch maybe, below the surface of the pot, so it doesn't stick up and show or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you still plant on top of there, on around it.
So he might even be able to do, I don't know how you do that now, with
he's
it already planted. Yeah, he's
yeah,
already got
well,
it planted. But yeah, that's a good idea, but he might even be able to do that somehow with it even one already planted. But, oh, good idea.
Yeah, okay. That was
good.
It.
Thanks for sharing.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, I have a question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
I didn't think about this till just now. I have tried to do those before, and the soil washes out the top. Is it helpful to put something over the top of the hole as you plant to kind of keep that soil up, like a little roof over each planting hole?
With the strawberry pots you're talking about?
Yeah.
A roof over that.
Like a little piece of, I don't know, styrofoam or plastic of some sort or a broken pot. Mm-hmm. Something over the, when you plant the hole, plant the plant through the hole, if you put something over the top of that, would that help keep the soil from washing out? Because I have the same problem.
Yeah. And again, you're planting as you're going up, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you plant them as you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think the thing that I've noticed, I mean, that might help. I think I understand what you're saying, but so when, especially when you first, it's always when you first water. You know, it's that first watering, so they really seem to wash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it might help that first watering.
Mine continue to wash out.
Even after that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would wonder about, you know, if you really, because I really stick them in hard. Because I really, it's probably not the best thing in the world for the plant, but I really stick them in hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, that might be one thing. But I think I kind of understand what you're saying. But it probably if there was a little bit more lip on the top, like you're saying, it wouldn't wash out quite so much.
Yeah, on the inside.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So maybe there's just, they need a better design.
Maybe.
You could come up with a design. And
okay, I'll patent that.
And then you can patent that and...
Yeah. Make mine.
Let me know about that.
Make your fortune.
We'll do that. But you're right. Or just plant hen and chicks and you hardly have to water them.
Yeah, there we go. Okay.
Yeah, well good luck.
Okay.
All right, thanks very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We keep going here. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on Tuesday, she's here. And we take questions on lawn and garden care. 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana. We do have that toll-free line also. If it would be a long-distance call, use that, 800-222-9455. Next, we'll talk with someone in Homer, line number two.
Hello. Hello.
Yes.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about possibly taking cuttings. I lost a tree last week in a heavy windstorm. And I was just wondering if there's a way that I could take cuttings off of that particular tree to kind of keep that tree, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And what kind is it?
To be honest, I'm not exactly sure. It's it kind of looks like an apricot. It doesn't fruit, but it has like lavender flowers in the spring. I don't know.
Sounds
exactly.
Sounds lovely.
Pardon me?
Sounds lovely.
Yes, it's very nice. My wife likes it, so. It's kind of the reason why we don't know exactly what kind of tree it is, but we'd like to take some cuttings from it. And I've been online most of the week trying to find out any kind of information. I went to the Arbor Day Society, and they gave me a link to another website, and it's a little bit confusing.
Yeah, it really depends. That's why I was asking. It kind of depends on the plant, but you certainly can take cuttings from things. But the problem is with some, depending on what tree it is, they kind of take different requirements or have different requirements on whether it's new wood or older wood. Obviously, right. You don't have that advantage here. You kind of have the wood you have. So I would go ahead, and I assume you've already taken them because the plant's on its way out, obviously, because it fell over.
It's still, I haven't cut it down because it's still kind of connected and the foliage is still alive. Or maybe it's on the process of dying, but it's not wilting yet.
Right.
So I didn't know whether or not I should take towards the end of the branches where it's like new growth or.
Yeah, that's why it kind of depends on what it is, because you have softwood cuttings, you have semi-hardwood, and you have hardwood, and that's how if you read the literature, that's what they'll tell you. And at this point, you're probably at the point where it's kind of semi-hardwood. It hasn't completely hardened off, but it's still starting to get there, and so you're kind of at that stage, which actually is not too bad for a lot of the trees to propagate them. So you really need to find out what the tree is, and where are you located?
Just south of between Homer and Sydney.
Oh, okay. If you want to, maybe you could bring a branch into our office, and we'll help you figure out what it is. And we actually have reference books there that give us, information on propagating certain tree species, and then we might be able to help you out from there.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a really good idea. We're at 801 North Country Fair Drive, so kind of on the other side of Champaign from you.
And
that'd be a real good thing. We could go from there. So there's information out there. You just have to figure out what kind of plant it is.
Okay, one other question, kind of unrelated, but is it coming up on the time that we were supposed to be spraying for bagworms? I remember last year I heard like June 15th.
Yep, we sure are. I'm glad you brought that up. I was hoping somebody would bring that up because we've had such a problem with bagworms. So absolutely, this would be the time we're going to start seeing the young ones come out. And they're really tiny at this point. So we'll start seeing them now. So usually we spray now and then again in another couple weeks.
So I should go ahead and spray now.
Yeah. The biggest thing is don't spray when it's above 85 degrees.
Okay.
So you're going to have to find a cool day before you do any spraying on it. But this is the time and you can go out and check. So if you've had bagworm problems in the past, this is the time to be worrying about it.
I've got a couple of spruces that looked pretty bad last year.
Oh, they've been it's been horrible on blue spruces. I've seen a lot of blue spruces hit very hard. And people should look up because a lot of times that's where they'll show up. And next thing you know, the top part of your tree is dead.
Right.
So,
okay.
So I'm glad you brought that up. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Thank you. Let's go next to St. Joe, line 3. Hello.
Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. I received a hydrangea bush for Mother's Day, and I was told to use aluminum sulfate to make it turn blue, but the directions does not say how often to use it.
Oh. Well, now, is this in the ground or is this in the pot?
It's in the ground.
Okay. Well, usually on that, it's as you water, so you're really going to use it on a regular basis.
All right.
So usually you're going to do it on a regular basis because it really takes a while to get them to go blue.
The directions say 2 cups for 5 gallons of water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I should. Someone told me just a one-time basis, but that's not so.
I don't think you're going to find that. Yeah, not in our soils. If we had an acidic soil, you could probably get away with that, but with our soils, because you're really fighting the fact that they're not acidic enough and then the fact that they need more aluminum, so you're kind of...
And how often should I water with this?
I wouldn't do it every day. I'd probably, once or twice a week, once every week or two. I didn't say that right.
All right.
So you're not going to do it every single watering necessarily, but if you're watering every day, I wouldn't do it.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Let's go to Belgium, line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get back in touch with you about last month I spoke to you about Japanese maples.
Mm-hmm.
I went and found out these things are amazingly hard to start from seed.
Yeah, I believe it.
You have to boil them in water. You have to scrape them. You have to freeze them. You just go through an amazing thing, and you have to count back the number of days so you get it just right when you want to plant it.
Wow. You're determined.
Oh, I am.
To go through all that.
And then to come to find out, if you start them from seed, you don't necessarily get the tree you started off with.
Right,
That's good for rootstock, and then you're supposed to clip off the tree you want and graft it to that. So you're just about better off to go buy them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because it really is one of those things where you get these cultivars, and you know they're selected for a certain color or the way the leaf looks and all that stuff, and that just doesn't translate into the seeds. So you're right.
According to the individual I talked to, he makes quite a bit of money doing this out of his driveway and garage. He makes like thousands of dollars a year to do this because they're so hard to start.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I believe it. So I absolutely believe it.
It makes a business out of it. So
well, good luck if you're good luck if you're on that route.
Yes,
so.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank
Bye.
You. We will continue. The next person is in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Yes, hi. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for taking my call. I have a couple of calls. One is about, you know, some kind of environmentally friendly alternative to a presently very, you know, weeding, mowing, and watering intensive lawn. And I came across this one on the web, which is called Ecolawn. And apparently it's not a genetically modified organism, but I was wondering if you have heard anything about it. You're probably not allowed to endorse brands, but if you have any experience to share about these kinds of deep-rooted lawns, which are seems to be a mix of different seeds. And then the other question I had, if I may just throw out the two and then I hang up, is our backyard every year seems to be filled with these so-called volunteer trees that just pop up out of nowhere. And I was just wondering if there's something one can do to prevent them from popping up and what to do once they pop up. I want something that I can do on my own without having to call a very expensive tree service.
Right, right. So you're getting little seedlings coming up in your even in your garden and stuff.
Yeah,
probably. Yeah. Maples often will do this. Elms will do this, and there's quite a few trees that produce seeds. And unlike the Japanese maple seeds we were talking about, these seeds like go crazy. And this year seemed to be a really good year for a lot of seedlings. So usually, if you can pull them out early enough, they're easy to pull out.
Mm-hmm.
Once you mow them off, if they come up in your lawn, once you mow them off, you don't have to worry about them at all.
Once
you mow them, that's it for those. So they're not gonna keep going. When they're seedlings like that, they're not gonna keep going. So you're pretty lucky along those lines. Now, as far as the Ecolawn, this is supposed to be certain grass varieties? Is that the idea?
It's a mixture of, it seemed like seven different seeds. Huh. And yeah, I was just wondering if you have had any experience.
Yeah, there's certainly some grass species are less maintenance than others.
Mm-hmm.
Like tall fescue, there's a turf type tall fescue actually is a good one for kind of lower maintenance areas where you're not going to be watering, where you're not going to be fertilizing as much. And they really do a pretty good job. They'll stay green. It's not that blue green kind of look. So it looks a little bit different, but you know, you can get the turf type tall fescues and they do a pretty good job of having a fairly low maintenance or lower maintenance lawn than you might get with Kentucky bluegrass, perennial ryegrass. And so there are some that we have that you could certainly do that. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what this Ecolawn is. Mm-hmm. I'd be a little leery if it has things like buffalo grass in it. Buffalo grass was taunted there for a while as being this really low maintenance grass. Well, it's great in Kansas. It doesn't do very well here.
I see.
And it's a warm season grass, and it doesn't do a very good job of you know, grows during the warmer season, but then we have a lot of cool season weeds, and the weeds just take over. So I'd really look at those species and what's in there. And what they're putting together. So, but I would certainly look at, you know, tall fescue or some of the other ones that
you
might think about.
Can you spell the name of this one that you just mentioned?
The tall fescue?
Yeah.
It's tall, T-A-L-L. Tall. And then fescue, and it's F as in Frank, E-S-C-U-E. Tall fescue.
Okay.
And it's also used in pastures, and you don't want that one. What you want is they're called turf type tall fescue, turf type. And they're they're not as wide a leaf blade, and they just make a better looking lawn than the pasture type tall fescue.
Oh, thank you so much for that suggestion.
Uh-huh. Good luck.
Thank you. All the questions, comments are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. It looks, I'm just been doing a little surfing. Well, actually, here is something that's called, there are a number of things, if you just put that into the browser, you're going to get a lot of hits. Here, for example, well, is something, some service that's has something that's called Ecolawn, and what it says is that it's a specially designed blend of seven fine fescues. And what they say is it's virtually maintenance-free.
Yeah, I'd be.
I would wonder about it. But there does seem, well, there seem to be a lot of interest here in people who would like to have something that looks like a lawn that would be, you wouldn't have to fertilize, you wouldn't have to water, and I suppose ideally you wouldn't have to mow.
Yeah, and there is a lot of interest in that, and it's certainly not, I mean, it's certainly something that's noticed in the turf industry. They're trying to find more, because it's a maintenance issue, and so they're trying to find ones that don't grow as tall, just naturally don't grow as tall. But the problem is you weigh that against what the root system looks like, and that seems to be the problem right now. You get these shorter grasses, but they don't have quite the root system. Or, as I said, they're a warm, like buffalo grass actually is kind of nice. It doesn't get terribly tall, but it doesn't do well here simply because it doesn't combat the cool season weeds very well. So you end up with a weedy lawn with a few grasses in it. And there is some interest in actually putting white clover in mixes again, and I'm starting to see more of that. That used to be something we always did, you know, way back when. They always put white clover in there because it does provide a certain amount of nitrogen and stuff to the lawn. So, you know, maybe one of those things, we're going to see some changes and people are going to decide that they want different things. So I think eventually we will get there. We will get there to the point where it's a shorter lawn, doesn't have to be mowed quite as often, those kind of things.
And I suppose for us here in this part of the country, we have a kind of a problem because we can have real extremes. It can be really cold. It
and
can
that's
be really
problem.
Hot. It can be really dry. It can be really wet. And to get something that will tolerate almost anything, it's going to be really difficult.
And then be thick enough and sturdy enough that it will won't let weeds come in, that it would also take traffic, because that's our other thing. A lot of people use their lawn. They use it for soccer or whatever they use it for. The kids play on it. So it has to take some of that abuse. So there's a lot of things that we're asking, you know, for a lawn to do. Yeah. So I think that it'll get there eventually.
We'll see how many more calls we can take. And let's talk next with someone in Champaign, line two. Hello.
Yeah, artificial turf.
Hey, you're on to something.
You can play tennis or clay. clay, that'll be easy. You just dig down a few feet.
Hey, there you go.
Actually, I have a blue spruce with some white stuff on various spots. So could you you're just like a doctor. Could you tell me what to do?
When you say there's white spots, where are the white spots? On the limbs or on the...
Where it was cut, maybe around that, different spots.
Yeah.
Sort of spotty.
Okay. If it's where a limb was cut, that's perfectly natural. For a lot of the pines and spruces and stuff, that when they kind of weep this stuff out, a lot of times it'll turn white. Okay. Now, if you're getting white stuff coming out of a branch that's not been cut off, then it can be some disease problems.
Okay.
So if it's just strictly just coming off of a branch and the rest of it looks fine, then I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Okay. Well, it's sort of colorful, actually. If it just do stripes, it'd be nice.
There you go. We'll have to work on it.
Thank you. I'll go next to a caller here in Homewood, line three. Hello.
Yeah, hi. A couple of questions, if I may. First one actually relates to cutting, and this is a fig tree that I cut back every year and put underground so it doesn't freeze. I live 10 miles south of Chicago. But I'd like to move, or at least help this tree grow in another house I have. I was wondering how I can do that. It flowers. It grows figs every year. And then secondly, I've got a couple of evergreen bushes that I moved, and one of them looks like it's dying or not as green as it was before, and which is actually standing next to two evergreen trees that are green in the front where the sun is, but have just about died off on the other side where the shade is. Can you tell me or address any one of these?
Okay. To be honest with you, I don't know much about growing figs. So you know a lot more about growing figs than I do. I'll be honest with you on there. And so you're just trying to get it to grow better?
Well, the fig tree, I'm selling the property, but I want to leave the tree there. But,
gotcha.
But I'd like to help it, you know, establish it somewhere else without digging the whole tree up.
Oh, so you want to take cuttings or something?
Yeah. Right.
Oh, okay. That would be another thing that you'd really have to check, and I'm sure there's obviously ways that they could probably take cuttings, but it really depends on the plant. So probably if you can do a web search or go to your local library, you can find out how to take cuttings of those, because usually that's how it's been done for a lot of different plants. As far as the evergreens, I guess I'd think about a couple things. You'd moved some of them, and they're just not – do you know what kind they were, or just not sure?
Right. One I moved a bush – a rotund bush, and it's not doing very well. And I moved it to a spot near two rather tall evergreen-like trees, and the trees are green where the sun is, but behind in the shade they're just about dead. They're just twigs.
Right. Well, unfortunately, a lot of the evergreens don't tolerate shade very well. So it'd be perfectly normal for them to die on the backside if they're not getting any sun back there. And you may just find that they're getting so big to the point now where they're just shading it out so much, and they're just not going to and that's perfectly normal for them. I know we don't like the way it looks, but unfortunately, it's usually the side that we look at the most is the dead side. So that I'm afraid is just part of just the way it is on those. As far as the other ones not looking well, certainly making sure that you water them enough. I'm sure you probably know that part, but not overwater them. That would be one thing, especially if they're having to be used. Ewes hate to be overwatered. So, and depending on what kind of soil you have, I'd be really careful to make sure they're not overwatering them, too.
I should have called you yesterday, I guess.
But then, it might not be too late. And I wouldn't give up on them yet. I never give up on anything till it's completely dead.
Is there some kind of spike I can add, minerals or something?
You really don't need to. Your best bet when these things are transplanted, we really don't recommend a lot of fertilization. Just, water them when they need to be watered, mulch. Try to give them all the things that they need along those lines, and that's really your best way to get them through.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
all
good
right,
luck.
Thank you. I'm going to have to jump in here. I'm sorry. We have a couple of callers we can't take, but we're just at the end of the time. Sandy will be back next month. We'll do it again on third Tuesday. Also, if you're in and around Champaign-Urbana, coming up, the Garden Walk is in about 2 weeks.
June 23rd is the Champaign County Garden Walk, and then this Saturday is Monticello's and Decatur's.
Okay, so that's always a great opportunity
walks.
To walk around, see what other people have done, get some ideas, learn about new kinds of plants. And so if they want tickets for the Garden Walk, best – to get with your office?
Or any of the local garden centers, for the most part. All local garden centers have tickets, or they can come to the Extension office, and we'll be glad to do that for you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
Sandy Mason, horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's with us once a month on the third Tuesday at 10 o'clock hour.